I have been asked, friends, to begin with my author's preface to this book named The Supreme Splendor. To the reader whose knowledge of the angelic hosts and their ministry to men is drawn wholly from scriptural sources, the idea that this book is the product of such angelic ministration may seem strange, and even incredible. Yet, this is the fifth of a series of books written, I have reason to believe, as a result of angelic inspiration. On hearing and reading those words, one should not think, as well one might, of spiritualistic forms of inspiration, of entrancement, of automatic writing, or of other mediumistic processes. I was wide awake when I wrote these five volumes and in full possession of my faculties. For many years, I had endeavored to train myself to be able to induce at will a state of lucidity of mind in which the principles and ideas behind the phenomenal worlds may be more easily understood. On one occasion, whilst I was in that condition, an angel teacher became clearly visible to my mental eyes, not as an imaginary figure, not even as a religious conception, but as an actual reality. He proved to be a highly evolved member of the angelic hierarchy, whose knowledge and powers far surpass my own. Thereafter, the teachings contained in the five books referred to began to be received. Just now, I used the masculine pronoun, he, when referring to the angelic teacher, but in the angelic kingdom, there is no sex differentiation, even though, for convenience, I now use the masculine pronoun. This angel teacher dwells in that state of consciousness which is concerned with abstract ideas and formless concepts. In this region, the living truth behind formulated doctrines and dogmas is to be found. And from it, the great geniuses of art and science draw their highest inspirations. The ideas contained in this book were primarily conveyed as personal instruction from teacher to student. They were not recorded with a view to publication, but in order to preserve the guidance which I received. At the time of their reception, I was not concerned with literary perfection, but only with achieving comprehensible expression in words of the succession of ideas with which the angel teacher flooded my mind. Under his influence, however, and without any conscious effort on my part, the transcription was found to be in the form of prose poetry. When teaching, the angel first selects that portion of truth which he wishes to impart. He then elevates my mind as far as its limitations permit this to be done, into a measure of his own comprehension of that truth. This frequently becomes visual, as if I were watching the processes of the emergence and evolution of universes from within the hitherto darkened sea of cosmic space. At the same time, as I watch, he teaches by means of a rhythmic flow of ideas in poetic form, which, with the exception of minor verbal changes made for the sake of clarity, I have endeavored to preserve. The faculty of writing in this way is difficult to acquire and to perfect. One must, for example, remain positively conscious in those higher mental realms in which the teaching occurs, grasp as fully as possible the successive ideas which enter the mind, and then translate them into appropriate language. Since very conscious that these difficulties have been only partially surmounted, I would ask the readers of this book and my listeners for their kind indulgence in the presence of imperfect literary expression of the highly metaphysical and profound ideas which I have sought to convey. A partial description of my mental experiences and the physiological responses associated with this process may be of interest to you. The central truth enters my consciousness, as also does a stream of power, which causes me to feel that my intellect, and indeed my brain itself, are both charged with energy, and from within, illumined with an intense light. It seems to me always at the time that a shaft of fiery power, down which inspiration flows, connects my higher consciousness with my brain, which is then recognized as only an external instrument. The third ventricle of the brain and the pituitary and pineal glands form the physical end of this shaft. Sometimes, during the teaching, I have the strange experience of seeing inside my head and of observing the intense activity there, especially of the superphysical counterparts of those two glands and their surrounding areas. The capacity to sustain the lucid state of mind and to endure for protracted periods the hypernormal rapidity of vibration, this capacity increases with practice, as also does the ability to perceive and to translate into words a widening range of ideas. Yet, beyond, there will always be the unattainable, the knowledge that the words fail of their true purpose, and that the vision splendid has become dimmed in the process of translation. In the hope, however, that a measure of the truth behind the words will be conveyed to the reader and to you as listeners, I now make available this fifth book of angel teachings. Perhaps, friends, you would like to come with me, would you, in thought, into that old beech forest in a secluded valley deep within the beautiful Cotswold Hills in the western part of England, where, quite unexpectedly, the experience began. Now, as I follow the requests, begin to read the book from the first chapter, entitled The Nature of Divinity, I will speak slowly to give you time to follow these wonderful ideas. Not mine, remember, but received from the angel teacher, as I came to believe. Now the book itself begins, and the angel is himself communicating. What does he say about the nature of divinity? I quote, "Divinity is not a being, but a power. Not an entity, but a force. Not a stationary and completed phenomenon, but an ever-flowing stream of life, not limited to any area, however great, but free. Divinity grows and moves eternally. It is the very tide of life, on which all manifested worlds are born. It is all-pervasive, ever-present, and eternal. It has no permanent expression, no continuous mode of phenomenal existence. The manifestations of divinity appear and disappear continuously, each reappearance differing from the manifestation which preceded it. Divinity is not wholly incarnated in any form, whether planetary, solar, universal, or cosmic. As you will have noticed, friends, the angel teacher does not conceive of God as an almighty, personal, extra-cosmic ruler. Rather is deity presented as the immanent and the transcendent power, life, intelligence, and law manifesting within and presiding over the solar system. God passes, the teacher continues, but never stays. Divinity exists, but is immeasurable, intangible, and invisible. Now an analogy, friends. The fish knows not the beginning and the end of the cormorant's flight. It knows only the moment when it is caught. So man knows only that section of the stream of life which flows past his mind at any given time. That which he observes changes continually, though to his mind it may appear to be unchanged. Yet man is not remote from God, nor does the intangibility of the Supreme serve to separate man from God. For man is as one of the particles of which the beam of light consists, a portion of the ever-flowing stream of life, a time expression of eternity. The tide of life pours ceaselessly throughout all worlds. The hardest jewel, the solid rock, the sand, the soil, and all that grows therein, all living, moving things which creep or run or swim or walk or fly. Through these, the divine life ever sweeps, imparting to them its own nature, so that all things are divine. Hid deep within the jewel is the full power of divinity. It dwells therein, yet is ever flowing as a resistless force, harmless because flowing according to the law. So too, in man all power is hid. The evolution of the human soul is but the search for that secret hiding place, a gradual removal of the veils which enshroud the divine life. Though hid, that life sweeps on eternally, emerging from the spark, which is man's deepest self, and passing thence throughout all his vehicles. The flow is steady, rhythmical, and harmonious in jewel and in plant, in animal and in bird, for these have no self-will. In man, self-will appears, and in his blindness, he disturbs the rhythm and the harmony of the life of which he is both a partaker and an expression. That disturbance may be great or small, but according to the measure in which man sets his will against the stream of life, so is the measure of the resulting dissonance. If the existence of evil is admitted, then this, and this alone, is its source. The greater the degree of self-will, the greater the interference with the flow, and therefore the greater the disharmony. At last, man learns the true reason for all suffering, and thereafter sets his will, and so behaves that he no longer impedes the motion of the eternal life, but rather provides new channels for its everlasting flow. Then, and not till then, all sorrow, pain, suffering, and disease are brought to an end for him. Then alone is he free. Being free, he serves the life in all, as in the blindness of his earlier lives, he sought to serve himself. In that change, he has found bliss. In his youth, he sought the feet of God in heaven above. In his manhood, he discovers the God within himself, is liberated, and becomes one with life itself. The second chapter, chapter 2 of this book, would seem to need its own explanatory introduction, and for two reasons. The first is that the angel teacher began his description of the processes of emanation from an infinite source, not with cosmos or the totality of existence, beginning with lesser units within cosmos, referred to as universes. This has not been changed, it being desired by me to leave the teaching just as it came. Nevertheless, it may here be said in this introduction to chapter 2 that the emanation of the whole cosmos is naturally presumed to precede that of a single part. The second reason for this explanatory note is that a somewhat subtle philosophic idea is expounded in the opening paragraphs of this chapter, namely, that light and sound can exist in two conditions. They are always interiorly immanent within the substance of cosmos as attributes of matter. They can, however, be either objectively manifest and so visible and audible to man, or in a subjective state, and both invisible and inaudible to him. It would seem, therefore, that the energy which produces the effects of light and sound can exist in either an active or a latent condition. Now I begin to read the second chapter. Remember, won't you, friends, it is the angel teacher who speaks. Behold, the hour before the dawn of the universal day. Darkness, unrelieved by any ray of light, envelops the vast fields of space. Silence, utter stillness, reigns. The universe is motionless. All powers lie quiescent. Energy, motion, light are present but invisible. In their quiescent state, they are even more potent and more awe-inspiring than in the fullness of their activity. In this hour before dawn, the ultimates of being are sunk deep in their age-long sleep. Within the all-pervading darkness, there is potential light, the imminent light by which the cosmos will be illumined, lies as yet invisible within the darkness of a sleeping universe. Within the silence is hidden sound, inaudible, save in realms beyond the sleeping universe. Silence reigns amid all pervasive sound. The darkness is non-dimensional, yet all possible dimensions exist within it. Its circumference is unknowable. Its center cannot be discovered. For amid the darkness, center and circumference are one, unknown yet universally present, inherent in the darkness yet unmanifest. Cosmic dimensions are unknowable amid the darkness of a sleeping universe, which is as yet without dimensions, without light and sound, dimension cannot exist. Within the utter stillness exists a motion which as yet is unrevealed, the eternal motion from which all universes spring is inherent in the sleeping universe and ensures its awakening. At the touch of the cosmic waves, quiescent motion springs to life and energy is born. The cosmos is inherent in the universe by means of five penultimates. These are light, sound, dimension, motion, and power. During universal night, the cosmic five have been withdrawn into their unmanifested state. They are the fivefold seeds from which the universe to be shall sprout and grow. When at last the dawn appears to usher in the universal day, they are the parents and the source of every form of manifested life. In their turn, they are the products of the eternal and unchanging motion of the cosmic waters, in which all universes rest as islands in a sea. Now, friends, we come to the third chapter, which is called Dawn. Behold, once more the darkness, the silence, and the equipoise, all-pervading, unchanging, motionless, yet pregnant with life, power, and consciousness. Within the darkness, a point of light appears. Motion sweeps in a single wave throughout the vast and shoreless sea, changing its dark immobility as a passing gust of wind changes the still surface of a sleeping pool. A single note is heard, pervading the silence on every side, as if rising from its very depths, and sounding also from side to side. The point of light slowly becomes a sphere. The volume of the sound increases. In the outer fields of space, darkness and silence still reign. Once more a wave of motion, higher and deeper than the first, passes in a single mighty sweep throughout the wide realms of space in which the still dark universe is to appear. Myriads of points of light shine out as if darkness had become self-luminous. The sphere of light becomes golden and glowing. Its radiance increases, suffusing the darkness with widening halos of light. The sound grows in intensity and booms like the note of a vast resounding gong struck by some cosmic hand. Still, the light and the sound increase until the last shadows disappear and silence is no more. Light and sound alone remain. Dawn breaks from within. The silence is broken by interior sound. The immanent God awakens. Sound continues and form appears. The first form is spherical, with central light within. The outline of a universe appears. Lines pass from center to circumference, indicating regions in which solar systems will be formed. In each, the latent will become the potent, the quiescent bestirred into the active state. The universal equipoise having been destroyed, universal energy is freed. Sound, light, and power are the threefold attributes of that from which all solar systems spring. sound creates. Light illumines and conveys. Power energizes and gives life. Sound is first manifest, that form may follow formlessness. Light links the parent with the offspring. Power is conveyed by light to give that offspring life. Such is the eternal sequence of events. Such the mode by which the unmanifest becomes the manifest. Formlessness gives birth to form, darkness to light. Thus, the divine sleeper awakens and begins the enactment of his dreams. During the long night, the drama was composed and perfected. At dawn, the stage is set, the scenery prepared, and the actors appear. The sixfold cross, which is the foundation of all material worlds, first appears. From the center of sound, light, and power, six mighty arms stretch forth and touch the farthest confines of the region in which the solar system will be formed. These are the members of the body of that mighty one, who is the parent of sound, light, and power. His limbs are formed of flowing energy. They are great streams of power, which rush forth from the central heart of creation to establish the coming cosmos amid the chaos which hitherto has reigned. The cross of matter becomes the tree of life after the parent of life has crucified himself thereon. From the heart of that which is about to die, that worlds might live, the lifeblood of the martyred God begins to flow. The mighty cross begins slowly to revolve. It gathers speed, and spinning sheds abroad the seeds of life, which have been nourished through the long eons of his repose. Vast whirlpools, mighty eddies, are formed within the area of the tremendous revolutions of the cross. Each arm is a manifestation of an aspect of his power. Each performs a twofold function, pouring forth his life and drawing it back again. Each also is as a vast magnet which dynamizes solar space. The ether, shut within the solar egg, milk-white and virginal before the sounding of the word, now densifies and follows the revolutions of the cross. In time, a vast and whirling nebula appears. Within it, the fields of solar space begin to be lighted by the gleams of the newborn sun and made ready for the heavenly husbandman. By his voice, he created them. By his light, he illumines them. By his power, he fertilizes them. He weds himself to solar space, unites his cosmic life with solar life, and awakens with his cosmic kiss the sleeping beauty, which is the solar sea of space, hitherto asleep upon the broad bosom of the infinite. Such is the dawn of the solar day. Chapter 4, Day and the Lords of Day. The sleeper awakens. The universal becomes the solar. Equipoise gives way to motion, and from motion, form appears. Then, from the glorious heart of all things, visible and invisible, the tillers of the fields appear. They are the solar archangels, the seven mighty ones, the servants to whom he has given the power of mastery over all forms. They are the solar kings, resplendent with spiritual majesty, effulgent with solar light and power. These are the seven viceroys of our Lord the Sun, and to each a kingdom in the newborn universe is given. To each his task is assigned. Slowly they emerge, gigantic figures, robed in flame, shining with splendor, awe-inspiring in their mighty power. They are emanations, have come forth from the sevenfold Logos, the first to be manifest in his newborn worlds, the spiritual kings, the Logos incarnate, whose power and love and beauty no single form can express. Sevenfold is he, seven the bodies in which he clothes his omnipotence, omnipresence, and omniscience. Perfect and full formed from the beginning of time are the archangels of the presence, showing forth their Creator's attributes. Although he created them, they are in no wise separate from him. They are his very self, the full expressions of that fragment of himself which he incarnates in the solar system, his offspring and his vehicles. Of the seven archangels, three shine forth as the perfected embodiments of divine will, wisdom, and intelligence. Four remain, each to enter into the full splendor of his appointed place as the solar system evolves, and the perfect expression of all the sevenfold attributes of the Logos is attained. Three were perfected in worlds long since crumbled to dust. At the birth of new worlds, they shine forth in their full perfection. Thus, from the first, power, wisdom, and order are established. Thus is displayed the eternal progression by which all manifested life moves onward from stage to stage, from embryo to fulfillment, from latency to potency, from seed power to omnipotence. Chapter 5, Infinity. infinite power, capacity, and multiplicity exist in embryo in every living thing. Infinity of time is provided for their unfoldment. Unlimited are the possibilities. Immeasurable the time. Existence consists of an ordered progression from the latent to the active. When the active state is achieved, a deeper latency is exposed to view. And this continues as layer upon layer passes from the unmanifest to the manifest and takes its appointed place according to eternal law. Essence is linked to substance, latency to activity, by a third principle, which partakes of the nature of both. That third exists and functions as an intermediate state between the free essence and imprisoning form. This intermediate state must be passed through at every stage of the growth of a solar system, from the first atom to the planets and their sun, from the first cell to all organic life. Chapter 6, Fire. On Earth, this intermediate state is fire, which shows itself as flame. Flame is both life and form, both form and formlessness, fleeting and continuous. It disappears and yet remains. So, when the fields of space have been prepared, and descending life is about to manifest in densest form, a mighty flame appears, whose fiery heart is the embryonic sun. From first to last, the sun is but a spring whence flows eternal fire. From plane to plane, that inner fire descends until the lowest plane is reached. Thereupon, the earthly sun appears and becomes a mighty instrument, a wondrous engine, by which inner fire is transformed into earthly flame. The sun is but a vast machine which receives the inward power, the spiritual energy, the universal fire, and sends it forth into the solar system, changed from the invisible to the visible. Thus, from the first, the sun and all the space in which new life is to be born are one vast sea of fire, a boundless ocean of flame. Though fire itself is formless, yet, amid the flames, the outline of the six-armed cross remains, directing all the fiery energies along their appointed channels, which are the foundations upon which the solar system is being built. Out of that great furnace, which thus burns at the solar dawn, vessels from the hand of the great potter will appear, Amid the seeming chaos of the solar flame, order is maintained by virtue of the six-armed cross. Still the fiery unit spins. The solar egg revolves as spiritual power is transformed into material energy. Amid the flames, the seven mighty ones appear, wielding and directing the vast powers of the fire. For in their strong hands, even that resistless might is but a fiery toy with which they play from age to age. Powers are their playthings. Creation is their sport. Form is the product of their creative play. Slowly, as they wield the mighty forces of the fire, the firstborn forms appear. They concentrate the streams of power and direct the flowing energies until they converge on a given point. Using as their patterns only the archetypal models, which are the basis of that spiritual geometry by which all worlds are built. These are not forms as they are known on earth, but their spiritual counterparts, extended into dimensions which link the solar system with the universe, and the universe with cosmic life. Even the models, according to which these seven mighty ones guide their vast activities, are formless to all worlds lower than those on which they live. They are but energies outflowing from the cosmic heart of things, meeting and crossing as they flow to produce the archetypes of forms. Thus, the mighty seven are the first builders of form. Standing amidst the first primeval flame, they shape the solar system according to the pattern by which its building must proceed. The outflowing and returning energies, the material with which they build, obey their will, and thus are forced to flow along their appointed pathway throughout solar space. These many streams of power touch and cross, and at their meeting, a fiery spring is formed, through which the inward fire flows. As in greater measure, it is flowing through the sun. Centers of fire and of power thus appear amid the flames in orderly progression. Gradually, the Solar Lord incarnates himself in these subsidiary centers of his life. As thus he is established in the flaming solar centers, the sun, which is his fiery heart, begins to withdraw its power into itself. The flames, which through long eons have played and streamed unconfined throughout the whole of solar space, begin to be withdrawn into the sun. 12 major centers through which invisible fire becomes visible, through which superphysical energies become physical power, are established round the sun. In their turn, they are built upon the same archetypal model as was the system to which they now belong. Each center is a sun in miniature, built upon the model of the six-armed cross. Impelled by primeval motion, each spins, as does the whole, and each revolves within the whole. Thus are laid the foundations of the solar system in terms of fire and of flowing power. Everywhere, amid the seeming chaos of fire, flame, and outward rushing energies, there is order and the operation of unchanging law. That which is thus being clothed in robes of growing density has passed from the invisible fire into the visible flame. Through the flame, the solar logos will appear in visible form. These mighty changes, which occur throughout eons of time, are all obedient to eternal law. For the mind of God is everywhere at work, as stage after stage of the solar incarnation is passed through.